Hi, I'm Kevin Turner, and welcome to this week's Realty Talk Show. And before we start, I want to say a big thanks once again to our supporters and sponsors, eRealty Media Group, BMT Tax Depreciation, Know How Property Finance, Get Rare Property, and Apiro Marketing. Well, kicking us off this week, Bushy is going to introduce our first guest in a series to help investors in the area of property management. And what better place to start than in the selection of a person to look after the management of your investment property? How do you go about getting a PM who is in fact going to treat your investment property as if it was his or her own? Great question. We will pose that question today of Hermione Gardner, whose company is appropriately called Sidekick. That's what you want when you've got someone beside you managing your investment. We also want to know what your rights are if you're not happy. All that's coming up shortly. You know, the opposite of FOMO, fear of missing out, is missing an opportunity because of fear. And the cost of that can be extreme, as Rusty from Get Rare Property will explain to Bushy today. And if this is your first time with us, a big welcome. You can help us grow by hitting the subscribe button and join the conversation anytime on Facebook at the Property Hub Collective. And we'll be back in just a moment as Bushy kicks off this week's show. Are you curious about harnessing your super for property investment? Propel your future with the enlightening online seminar, The Ultimate Masterclass to Self-Managed Superfund Property Mastery. Reserve your spot now at getrare.com.au/SMSF. Spearheaded by Rusty from independent buyer's agency Get Rare Properties, this masterclass unravels strategic property investment using your self-managed superannuation fund. You know, it's not just about learning. It's about transforming your financial future through education. So embrace this opportunity to enrich your investing acumen. Enroll now in the free masterclass and begin a journey that marries insight with action, leading to a financially empowered tomorrow.
Realty Talk and your host, Bushy Martin.
Now, welcome to more of our special property management series. And we've been saying for many years that the person who's going to make or break the property investment experience is your property manager, as they'll have actually the longest relationship with your property than anyone else. And the quality of their management of your property is the difference between a dream experience and a nightmare. So make sure you don't make the mistake of trying to do this yourself, because you just don't know what you don't know, and the industry is becoming way more litigious. So what separates a great property manager from a good or a bad one? And how do you select the one that's best for you? Sadly, many investors treat property managers as a bit of a commodity and assume that they're all the same. So they only focus on the one who's going to give them the cheapest management rate. But this is a massive and potentially very costly and expensive mistake. So to help you select a great property manager or decide if your existing property manager makes a grade, we're joined by industry veteran, coach and trainer, Hermione Gardner, the director of Sidekick. So welcome to Realty Talk, Hermione.
Thank you for having me, and you got the name right, so well done.
I had to pause there, but this is a really good subject, and one that we like to revisit, because people just forget the intricacies of what's involved and the importance of property management in that context. So I guess just to set the scene, can you sort of start by giving us a rundown on what separates a great property manager from just a good or average one?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think it's like what you're saying. I myself, even when I started out in property management many, many moons ago, like I probably thought I was a good property manager, like, but I realized over the years and where I am now in my career 20 years later, that I don't know how people trusted me to manage my property with 2 years experience in the industry, didn't know anything about investment properties. So I would say there's a number of factors that come into play. Experience is definitely going to be one of them. There's some basic fundamentals and foundations of being a property manager, but there's something that comes from having been a property manager for 5, 8, 10 plus years that there's some things you just know. They're not written into a process or a procedure, but there's some things you can just pick up about tenants or properties or risks that can really, it's like having a secret weapon in your pocket as an investor, right? Like it's like, as I think you mentioned in the introduction, you don't know what you don't know and things can get very litigious and it's impossible for even a good property manager to know all the legislation back to front. But a really great property manager will have that experience. They'll know the legislation. And they, I suppose the added layer of that is they're good at dealing with the people, and the people being you as the investor, but also the tenants, because whilst they might be property managers, a lot of what they do is managing people. And so what I've noticed over the years is property managers who aren't very good at dealing with people will get themselves into conflict, they'll get themselves into miscommunication, and those issues can escalate very, very easily. And I would say probably one of the number one reasons I've seen over the years investors leave a property manager, the root of it comes down to a miscommunication or communication in conflict. So I think a great property manager is actually not only experienced, but they are great at communicating and managing people and the nuances of people, both, as I said, with the landlord, but making sure that tenant is well communicated and a strong relationship is in place with the tenant. And then the final thing I probably add on to that, amongst many, many other things, is a really great property manager will actually understand investment property. I'm alarmed to say this. I ran a conference with about 80 property management professionals last year. And in a room of those 80 people, one of the speakers said, oh, what's the current investment rate? The current mortgage cash rate. And yep. Like not one person in that room of people managing properties, signing on new clients, knew what that rate was. And that was really alarming for me as a coach in the industry. And so what I really see is the really great property managers know and understand investment properties. They know yields, they know returns, they know about asset value, you know, your budget, your cash flow, how to reduce that risk and maximize those returns along the way. And I think that is really, especially now and into the future, what's going to separate a good property manager from an incredible one, so that you've not just got someone who can press the buttons, but actually advise you and keep you on track for your investment.
Yeah, really good point. And I think a good property manager is an investment manager in that sense.
Correct.
And if they're not understanding what the numbers are doing, but also have the soft skills to manage both sides of that equation, because they're pretty much the meat and the sandwich when it comes to keeping the landlord happy, but also making sure the tenant is comfortable and enjoying the space as a consequence. And let's face it, we've all seen prison guard come property managers that treat tenants like lesser beings. Less of that now, I'm glad to say, but also just don't understand what's in the landlord's head and get so stuck in task world that they're missing what's truly important to the person who owns the property. So love your thoughts on that. As an aside and putting on the spot, Hermione, I wouldn't mind getting your thoughts around the shift from what used to be a lot more portfolio style management, where the property manager had pretty much full management of the property from way to go, except perhaps leasing, to a much more pod style exercise where there's a bunch of links in the chain. Have you had any thoughts or experience around those and the pros and cons of each?
Look, it's really going to depend on the size of the business. And, you know, we're talking, you know, probably in this conversation today about selecting a great property manager, but a pod scenario is where there is a property manager, but then they're supported by maybe admin or leasing or accounts. So it's designed to take some of the functions out that are actually getting in the way of them managing the relationships, you know, working on, you know, looking at, is that property making as much money as it could? Like, where can we improve? Where can we minimize the risks? Because a lot, especially because of legislation, but also process, there's so many things now, you know, even just the email inbox the property manager has every day that consumes so much of their time and actually takes that them away from what they're actually really good at doing, which is the problem solving, the relationships, the, you know, all of that beautiful stuff. So yeah. I think that a pod for a bigger business, doesn't always happen for a smaller property manager, for a bigger business, it makes a lot of sense because it allows that business to, you know, manage more properties, but while keeping the quality of that property management service quite high, because there's, depending on the business, there's going to be a cap of how many properties a property manager can look after while still making sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and those relationships are in place.
Yeah, no, very well said. And now, I guess, thinking from the landlord's perspective then, what's your thoughts on how do you go about selecting a great property manager?
Yeah, it's funny. I've got a few ideas. One that I'll just touch on, which might be not maybe a common one that's brought up, but considering what you said before about tenants and how property managers can treat tenants and the impact that how a property manager treats tenants on the duration of tenancies, how long tenants choose to stay in properties, how much they, you know, cooperate with certain situations that come up. The tenant relationship is actually very important. So when you're selecting a property manager, like I actually have said before to landlords, put on your little secret agent hat and actually go and put inquiries on from a tenant's perspective in the agencies that you're considering. And even call and pretend you're a tenant or go to some of the opens and just see how you're treated as a tenant. And that's really going to give you a good indication as to how much emphasis they place on that. I know for myself, like, you know, I've got a property that I'm renting at the moment. My current agent is great, but the one I rented previously a few years ago, you know, even in my stature in the industry, like I was just so surprised at how they treated and how slow they were and how the responses that I got. And interestingly, then when I moved into that place, they were letterbox dropping that area looking for new managements. And I thought, well, if I'm an investor in your area, I'm not going to use you because the tenants weren't treated very well. And the tenants are usually the first ones on the Facebook groups and things to jump in. So, you know, layering that back, I always say to landlords, if they're asking me, oh, how do I find a good one? Like going with like reviews and what other people are saying is going to be really important. Same if you are going to go on a holiday or book a restaurant, you often look at reviews to see. So I would always suggest looking at the Google reviews and looking specifically for reference to, oh, the property manager was really great, or tenants actually on their writing, I've had a really great tenant experience. And looking at the experience that other people have had with that agency, not just the rating, but going a bit deeper. And then also, if you are part of those local Facebook groups, if you're in those areas, I know as an investor, sometimes you're not in those areas, but potentially joining some of those community groups and actually then typing in property manager, seeing what conversations has come up, or popping your own post in there to say, see who is recommended, because you will get, you know, some bad experiences, but you'll also get, you know, you'll probably see some trends. People are usually always recommending one or two particular property management agencies in that area. So along with your normal research of Googling and, you know, comparing all of that, I would really recommend looking at the customer experience, because that's really going to tell you the truth. And the other major thing is to not just shop on price. So there's a perception I have found for investors and landlords, and I totally understand because of the cost of everything these days and the increases in mortgage rates and all those sort of things, that they shop around to try and find the cheapest rate, probably because there's that perception that all property managers are the same. But I know from, you know, firsthand experience now working at as this service to the industry and coaching and training these agencies and businesses, that there are some pretty big differences between agencies who have really strong processes in place and really think about things strategically versus some who just treat property management as a little back office function if they're more sales focused. Yep. And the difference in that, sometimes you might go, oh, that one's, you know, 7% and the other one's 5%, depending on the area that you're in. And you might go, well, that one's cheaper. But we need to remember that a good agency, despite maybe paying a few extra dollars a week in a management fee, should be able to put more money in your pocket overall. They should be able to reduce your vacancy period. They should be able to improve your asset value over time. And so maybe despite paying a few extra dollars a week, you should see increased returns. And that is worth paying more for, in my
opinion. Absolutely. 100% agree. And you know, it's never about cost. It's always about value. And I remember my good wife who ran a very successful property management business, she always used to say to prospective landlords, if you're prepared to put your property at risk for the cost of a cup of coffee a week for your most expensive investment, you've got to question whether you're doing the right thing. And that's, you know, the difference between 5% and 7% is about that when you look at it on most properties. So points very well made. In terms of the asking exercise then, Hermione, what does the landlord need to ask and look for over and above what we've already touched on to ensure that they're actually selecting the best?
Yeah, so once you've kind of put a few agencies on your shopping list, I suppose, and then you're wanting to go and, you know, meet with them and shop around, I'd say ahead of asking, I would really try and just note how that process is from when they first deal with you to like booking in that first meeting, what efficiencies and what, you know, like how they're treating that process. I think that that's the first important step. Does the experience you're receiving then match the service promise that they're sitting down? I think really important, again, before asking questions is to see if the agent is actually asking you questions or if they're just coming to pitch at you and then asking if you have any questions at the end. Because I think that the really good agencies will ask you the questions to identify what's important to you, what your investment goals are, short-term, long-term, what your challenges are currently or have been in the past. Those are the agencies that are really trying to get to know you and that are actually going to be more property management minded and focused in providing that service. So I think that those are two really important things before the questions you ask. But then I think it's really, you want to probably ask some questions to assess their focus on property management. I think, as I mentioned before, there's some agencies who are probably more sales focused and they've probably tacked on property management as a side thing for the income, which great, good business model. But we want to make sure that there's some focus on property management, not just for having that service, but that maybe there's a director within the business that is property management focused, or there's a head of department or someone in that larger agency that is focused, or that you've got a very active director. Maybe the director is part of the property management team. They are the property manager, because having that property management focus, they're people that have come from the roots of property management, and they're going to be thinking about it differently to potentially, and this is generalizing, a sales focused agency who's just got property management. They're not probably going to invest in the tech and the tools and the training to get their team up to scratch. Yep. And so we really want to ask the question around, you know, who's focused on driving PM? What training is there? How are you upskilling? What systems are you, like, you know, have you got in place to make your property management experience better? And then I think, I mean, I was going to say before around like the treating how they treat the tenants, but I think that's probably going to come from you actually doing the research, because I can't imagine any of them are going to go, oh, like we treat them really bad. But I think, you know, I think that having the focus on property management, asking about the level of experience, like who's going to be managing my property. A lot of the agencies will have a BDM or someone that you might speak to first. So it's really important to know not just that BDM and the agency, but who's going to be the person actually managing the property. What experience do they have, and what can they actually bring to the table? Do they have an investment property? What do they know about investment properties? And trying to maybe ask some questions, or see, it's probably more seeing if they ask you the right questions to learn about your investment situation. Because I think, again, what you might find is they might sound really great from their marketing and their processes, but they actually don't know much about investment. And you might find yourself having more investment knowledge than they do. So I think finding the right questions to ask from that will be really important too.
Yeah, really good coverage and some great thoughts around that. And I agree with you. It comes down to the quality of the person who's actually managing your property. Yes, they need to have the system support and the management support, but if the person's only been there 5 minutes, and we all know that chairs in property management offices can be revolving doors if the environment's not right, then getting down to that level is really important. So some great points there. Now, if we're not happy with our current property manager, then Hermione, what can and should we be doing about it?
Oh, look, first point of call, I'd always try and speak to the property manager. Like, we've got to remember, like, they are human beings too. Like, you know, I've messed up as a property manager. I've overlooked things as a property manager. I've assumed things as a property manager. And sometimes it isn't, you know, until someone brings it to your attention that you realize, oh yeah, that is a problem. I didn't realize. So it's going to be dependent on the relationship that you have with that PM. But I would always say, look, if you're not happy about something, ask for a meeting, a call or a Zoom, like, you know, ask for a time where you can discuss the issues. I think instead of just bashing out an email with all of your anger and frustration, which is easy to do, is just say, hey, I've got a few issues I want to discuss. Like, I'm not super happy. Can we have a meeting to talk about it? You know, you might be able to hear it from their perspective and you might be able to shift your thinking around it. Won't always happen. Sometimes that property manager may act defensively or react badly. So I think the telltale sign is not going to be the issues that you have. It's actually how that property manager deals with it that's going to give you the indication on whether you should stay with that agency. It's kind of like if you go out to a restaurant for dinner and something's wrong with the meal, if you say there's something wrong and they're like, oh, no worries, Monsieur, we're so sorry, let's bring you a fresh one, let's give you free dessert, free bottle of wine, and they're, you know, make you feel good out of that bad experience, you're going to go back. But if, you know, they act defensively and they make you wrong and you the problem, then you're probably not going to go back. So it's that same kind of energy. And then I think if you don't get the result or you're unable to have that conversation with the PM, always ask to speak to the director, escalate it to the next level, unless obviously the person you're dealing with is the director of the business already. That would be a challenge for you. But look, if they're not meeting your needs, they're not delivering the service, they're putting you or your property at risk, they're not communicating, whatever those challenges are that you're having, like, you're never stuck where you are. There's a plethora of options out there for you, both local and, you know, cross-country options that can deliver property management services for you. So it might be time to look for another property manager. And so then you can research your options, like we were talking about before, find someone that's going to meet the needs that you have as an investor. You know, if they haven't been communicating, you're going to need to go and really find a property manager who is really strong at communicating, so you can feel that you're getting the right service there. And then you're just going to need to check your agency agreement, find out what your notice period is, and then your new agency that you choose can even just give the notice for you. So you can let them do the heavy lifting,
yep,
and change over your management to the new agency. And I would say the last thing is, like, don't hold off to a tenancy changeover to do that. If you're not happy, like, do that whenever the, you know, you're not happy and you want to change. It's actually easier from a property management perspective. If I'm a new agent, if I take on your property now in the middle of the tenancy, as opposed to at the tenancy changeover, it's actually a lot easier, because then I can come in, I can start doing the routines, I can manage that whole process.
Very well said, and covered some great points there. So look, we've only just scratched the surface, and I know we could talk for hours about this, Hermione, but I really want to thank you for these quite refreshing insights. And you've certainly reinforced the need to be very careful about who we engage to manage our property and how we go about it. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank you for all of the great work in terms of coaching and training that you're doing at sidekick.net.au to help property managers both grow and thrive for everyone's eventual benefit. So thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Property deductions can save you thousands of dollars each year. To make sure you maximise deductions, you need to work with the most experienced quantity surveyor in the country. BMT Tax Depreciation is the leading specialist in the industry. They've completed over 700,000 tax deduction schedules for residential investment and commercial properties Australia-wide. BMT guarantee to find double your fee in the first full financial year deductions. Call BMT on 1300 728 726 today for an obligation-free quote.
Now, have you ever caught yourself thinking or saying, if only I'd done this, or if only I'd done that? You know, that deep-seated feeling of regret when you miss out on an opportunity and then kick yourself later as you keep saying to yourself, I should have and I could have. Now, sadly, this is a common thought and feeling in the world of property. Because you can always find 1,000 excuses why you shouldn't buy a property, because you can always find a reason why it's never the right time. But as you're about to hear, it comes at a considerable cost. So what is the cost of missed property opportunities? Well, to explore this, we're joined by the founder of leading national buyers agency, Rusty Vaibhav from Get Rare Property. So welcome back to the show, Rusty.
Thank you so much, Rishi. This topic is so much meaningful to me, because you know, there's so much opportunities out there, and then we keep missing if we think too much about it. Something we know, analysis paralysis.
Totally agree. Absolutely, it's a really good topic to dive into, because I don't think many are really aware of the true cost of delay. To kick straight into it, Rusty, what are the long-term financial impacts of missing out on a prime property investment during a market upswing?
Sure. Before we really go into it, if that's okay, I'll share a fun fact. In year 1980, the Australian national housing median was $76,500. Let me say this again, $76,500 in 1980. Now, knowing that in 2023, after 43 years, the same matrix, Australian housing median across the country is $770,000. So it has gone 10 times almost.
Yep.
Now, I actually tend to ask this question that if we had the way to ask our parents, our grandparents, or ourselves, if we were around, how many properties we would have bought in 1980, knowing the fact that it has gone 10 times in 43 years. And because I do this on a regular basis as educational programs on Zoom or in person, I typically see lots of hands going up. And the answers that I get, like how many property would I have bought? The answer is as many as possible, even to the extent somebody said the whole Australia, if I could. Now, if I really talk about that number, if you think about it, it's not really out of context here, because now in 2024, we can safely say, I mean, of course, with a lot of question marks around it, that by 2066, as in another 43 years from now, the Australian housing median with the same rate of something called extrapolation, the median will be 7 million plus. If you wanted to buy that many properties in 1980, we should be thinking about buying as many as possible even now in this market. And of course, the caveat is that, oh, really, the growth might continue. But let me tell you that the capital growth rate between 1980 and 2023, the numbers that I've quoted, is not really out of the whack. It's actually just under 6%. It's 5.5% capital growth. And where we are sitting ourselves, that's pretty normal. I mean, that's really goes back to the history of the, you know, housing market that we have been tracking, or the AMP Capital has been tracking. It's about that number. So it's not really out of ordinary for us to think about the average median. I'm not really talking about the quality purchase. I'm just saying, if you just throw the darts on the board and you just pick randomly a few properties, we are probably getting close to the average. But with, of course, with the right research, with the right due diligence, we probably are picking the better half of the growth, as in, because median is median, right? It's right in the middle. That means 50% properties have done better, 50% have done worse than that number.
Yeah.
So in the search of finding the right property, what we have found actually is that people miss out on getting the right exposure in the right time. As yes. I said, there might be excuses, but let's not forget the reason why we are buying is for that growth, that kind of a functional security that property or a growth asset would give. And it really comes down to the point that, coming back to your question, that's a huge potential of capital gain loss we are making, because when we don't have that exposure. It also means that when we have intention to build a portfolio of buying a few properties, the success of the first one, because with the power of compounding is one thing, but then the second thing is that we can extract the equity out to go and buy the next one and the so on and so on. So the delay, which might feel that, oh, we missed out on that, might not seem too much because they do not know what they missed. So sometimes ignorance is a bliss to feel good. But certainly there is a missed leverage opportunities. I mean, real estate is all about leverage. You don't need to have all the money in your pocket. We can multiply that little money that we have, that return on investment or return on cash is a lot more bigger. And then we can extract and they can multiply. Then there's a compounding effect. And then the whole thing is about impact on retirement savings, right? So sooner we can get it, sooner we can retire. It's rather the question of how much money I should have in the retirement. I would say, have that money now or sooner, then you can retire. So there's a huge opportunity and there's a lot of follow through. But I would also add that when we don't have that financial security, it's not just about the financial well-being. It's also, it has a lot more effect on the things around us. Like when we know we can get there, it's much more easy. As an example, if I have to catch a flight and I know my flight, or I need to be at airport in 43 minutes exactly, and my GPS says that I'll be there in 20 minutes, as an example, not right? So I'm not on a panic mode.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when I know, I do not know about my journey, I just need to travel, I need to be there, that might lead to the panic. And the thing we really need to be mindful that there's a fear of losing money or the losing opportunity, that risk aversion or the loss aversion really plays a big role out there. So if you need to be mindful of what's on the other side, really, I mean, to me, that's a really the big cost of missing out on the opportunities.
Yeah, beautifully said. And that old quote by Steve Jobs that comes to mind here, where, you know, we all overestimate what we can achieve in 1 year, but way underestimate what we can achieve in 10. And you've given us a great example there of, you know, buying a property in 1980 and 10 times its value on the median value today. Well, there's countless examples of that being the case. So let's talk about the barriers now that they're stopping people from doing, because as you and I both said many times, it's the stop that starts. It's the start that stops most people. What are some of the common psychological biases that lead to these missed property opportunities, and how can investors actually overcome them?
Great question. So first of all, like, it's a fear of losing money. Lots of people are really keeping the money to themselves and thinking that this is the last straw, and, you know, like, we really need to make it work. And don't get me wrong, that is really the case. We really need to make every dollar count. But the anxiety around the loss, as you said, you know, there's other statement that the psychology around losing $100 is a lot more powerful, the fear of losing it, compared to the benefit or the gain that we make for the same $100 is not the same, because we tend to give more weightage to the loss element. So we tend to forget that what it might mean if it grows in our favor. So fear of losing money. So it's about education, not like emphasizing on the potential of the loss as an opportunity cost really can help us with understanding of that bias over there. The other element is the overconfidence, that people have a tendency that they know the market, they can time the market, they are just waiting for their last interest rate to happen so that they can jump in the market without realizing that the other players in the market are also saying the same thing. And all of a sudden, yes, there might be, I guess, more money in the pocket for people, but then there will be less properties to buy. And all of a sudden, we are competing again. So lots of people think that they have they tend to be overconfident around it. Then the other element of it is the herding bias. They really like to think that what others are doing in the market. I've seen so many times that people tend to grow or go sideways as a herd or as a community. Like, if somebody's doing something, that might be the odd one out to start with. But then all of a sudden, like, the whole friend circle, the group, social group goes around it. And what sometimes really happens is that they want to see that everyone is doing it. They don't want to be missing out. Then they choose to jump in. Maybe sometimes it's a bit too late. So there's a fear of missing out at the same time, but maybe too late in the journey there.
Yeah.
Other element I would also say is that this anchoring is also happening. And what anchoring means is that we tend to get fixated. For example, we were evaluating some properties in Central Coast in New South Wales here. And what we were buying 2 years ago, you know, setting up the mind that, oh, those properties will let go at, say, 500K. How can I go and buy it now, 650 now?
Yeah.
So because there's an anchoring there. So the way we can get away with that is to understand and the focusing on the education, looking at the long-term historicals, the trends, not just for the pricing, but also what's really the fundamentals of property investing, the supply and demand, having understanding of that really helps us with those. And then there's a confirmation bias. Sometimes we say that, okay, I want to do something, and then there's a bias there that I might ignore all the negatives around it, but all of a sudden somebody says the same word, I'll really get, you know, excited about it. It's like, if I'm running a, you know, blue Tesla, I will start seeing all the blue Teslas around there.
Yeah, no, very well said. So to sort of look at this in context, then, how should investors actually approach the property market differently in order to avoid missing the opportunities in the future, considering current trends and market data then, Rossi?
Yeah, so the way I would say is that it's the key things to be staying informed. having to understand, like having the clarity that what's happening in the market. Market is dynamic as well. Like we have been buying a lot of properties in the Perth market. What we saw the market about a year ago is not the same market anymore because other investors have woke up. And again, I'm not really saying that we should not be buying there, but now it's being the mindfulness of which pockets we should still be considering and what pockets we should let go. And again, it's really at the reasonable price or not. Because sometimes we might say, again, there's an anchoring coming in, like we were buying those properties at that price, should we buy now? Of course, that's an element. But if we stay informed to the fundamentals of property investing, I guess the other part of it is like staying true to your investment criteria.
Yeah.
Like having that investment criteria is the first thing, and then staying true to it is also, I guess, a very important element to it. As an example, if we are going for auction, we tend to write a number on a paper that we have to go by on this number, if at all, we have to buy this property. If, and our mandate is now that buy this property if it is lower than that, or let go the property. So setting that investment criteria is very clearly rather than becoming emotional, because that is the whole biases are all actually emotional.
Yeah.
So if we let the emotion come into play, especially for an unsupported investor who is really going against the sales agent on their own, they tend to become emotional because they have spent 3-4 months already to look for a property. And once they find a property, they are like, I really need to get my weekends back, you know, not this domain.com.au or realestate.com.au all the time on my laptop, but I really need to go and get a life. With that element, there's a risk of like people are feeling the pressure of missing out. Then they also know it is really going up and up and up. So there's a catch-up game. So being informed, having that clear set criteria, sticking to it, I guess being prepared as well. Like sometimes the properties will come and go very quickly. So we have to be very prepared very quickly in the market like this. Market will come and go very quickly. So can we really jump on the opportunity? Building some networks around it. So I guess it's all about continuous education around it. Like, can we really understand how the market is moving? What are the biases? Being mindful of those biases, being mindful to the long-term strategy, and also knowing what investment criteria will work for me. I guess it really comes down to having a long-term perspective of things. Yes, we might have to pay a premium to buy the right property, but when we know the performance is such, can we really make a compromise? Not really overly pay a big amount of price to a property, because you and I know we make money when we buy the property. So it's about having that emotional control, having that controls around it. And I guess the best way to do it is to work with the professionals who know this, who are doing this on a daily basis, more as a system rather than emotional investors.
Yeah, beautifully said. It's a topic we could talk more on, and we will in the future, but I really want to thank you for these quite timely and eye-opening wake-up calls, Rusty. And we suggest that anyone interested in taking their property investment to the next level joins you on one of your free upcoming Fast Tracking Your Financial Freedom live Zoom workshops by registering at your website on getrare.com.au/property-investing-for-passive-income, which again, we'll have in the show notes. So thanks again for coming on the show and sharing this with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Fussy.
Successful property investment is a game of finance. Do you have the right team and the right game plan? Realty Talk is brought to you by Know How Property. More than mortgage brokers, Bushy Martin and his team of investment architects set you up with a sustainable strategy structured to lower your costs, tax, risk, and stress while increasing your capacity for growth. Know How has helped over 1,900 homeowners and investors secure more than $800 million in property wealth. So get set to live more, work less, and live your legacy. Want to know how to invest in your freedom? Visit knowhowproperty.com.au.
This is Realty Talk, powered by realty.com.au.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Make sure that you don't miss your weekly dose of Realty Talk or Bushy's Get Invested podcast, both delivered to you each week. And you can do that by subscribing to the Property Hub now on your favorite podcast player or wherever you are listening to or watching the show. Thanks once again to our supporters and sponsors, and content partners, realtymedia.com.au, BMT Tax Depreciation, Know How Property Finance, Get Rare Property, and Apiro Marketing. And don't forget, you can join the conversation anytime on Facebook at the Property Hub Collective. In the meantime, I'm Kevin Turner, and on behalf of Bushy and the Property Hub team, we look forward to seeing you again next year.